want to study this morning a little bit about humility. And humility is kind of a tricky thing. The story is told of a young man who showed great humility, so much so that all of his peers got together and they made up a medal to give him, showing his humility and talking about how he was the most humble person they knew. And so they gave him this medal. And he was so excited when they gave him that medal that he wore it the next day, so they took it away from him. We've heard that before, haven't you? Well, that's the thing about humility. You see things like, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect. I've seen that on t-shirts and things, you know. And I think, well, if you think you're perfect, then you've got some other problems too. But the people say things like that many times. And we live in a society that doesn't really admire humility a lot of times. On some occasions we do. But then also we don't really like the person who's arrogant and boastful either. So we're kind of stuck in that, well, we don't like this, but we don't like that. And well, where's the happy medium? How can you be confident and yet still be humble and not be arrogant? And that's a tricky balance that we all have to strive for. Humility is often misunderstood. Somebody thinks that if someone says, well, I'm good at such and such, well, that person's not very humble. Well, they may be humble. They may just simply be describing the truth, maybe accurately reporting a particular fact. And it may not be a sign that they're not humble. I remember one of my teachers who became one of my favorite men and one of my heroes in the faith. When I first met him, I thought that he had the air of a false humility. He would be giving us material in class, and he said, now boys, this is good material. And he said, now, it's not because I wrote it. It's just good material because it came from the Bible. And I thought, wow, he's really bragging about how he wrote that material and gave it to us. As I got to know him better, I realized that it wasn't false humility at all, that he truly was a very humble person. But sometimes our perception of someone, our perception of pride and arrogance or of humility and meekness, we miss it sometimes. We think that someone is something that they're not, and so we have to watch out for that. In Luke chapter 14 and verses 7 through 11, Jesus tells a little parable, a little story to the people who were invited to this particular gathering that he was at. He was noticing that when they came in to sit down, and I guess he was an early arriver to be able to notice these things. Some of us, we'd never notice where people chose to sit down as we get there last. But he was noting that when they came in to sit down, they would choose the best places. And so he said to them, when you are invited by anyone to a wedding feast, or I suppose it would apply to any other gathering, any other thing like that, he said, do not sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, give place to this man. And then you begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say, friend, go up higher. Then you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Now let's notice a couple things here. First of all, Jesus didn't say that it was a bad thing or that you were not humble if you accepted honor from somebody else and even enjoyed receiving that honor. We all like to receive honor. Now, I know we sometimes will pretend we don't, and we'll get embarrassed when somebody compliments us. But deep down, we enjoy getting a compliment. We enjoy being honored for something if it's sincere, if it's not just fake flattery, and if it really is something that deserves to be honored or to be recognized. We can enjoy that, and rightfully so. And that doesn't mean that the person who enjoys getting some notice in their life is not a humble person. Well, they should have refused that. They shouldn't have accepted that award or whatever. No, they can accept that. And that's kind of the mockery of the story that we told at the beginning. If this man truly was the most humble, then it wasn't wrong for him to be honored for that, and it wasn't wrong for him to show that medal. What's the point of that medal if it wasn't for him to wear? Now, if he becomes boastful and arrogant about it, that becomes a problem. But for someone who has won an award and they've won it honestly, for them to put it on the shelf in their house, to be glad that they received that honor, that's not an arrogant thing. That doesn't mean that they are not humble. But then notice what he had said. When you go sit, don't sit at the best place. I don't know, depending on the wedding, some weddings they're real strict about all these kind of things, and they have place settings. We didn't at ours. It was just like, if you can find a seat, sit in. But a lot of them, you know, they have a special table where the bride and groom are going to sit at the reception or whatever, you know. And then they have, you know, the bride's family and the groom's family, and then they have other friends and relatives that and they have certain places that they're going to sit. So if you went to a wedding of someone that you barely knew because you were invited, but you didn't really know them all that well, and so you go to their wedding and you go sit up there at the head table where next to where the bride and groom are going to sit. They're going to come up to you and say, hey, look, you know, that's a seat that's assigned for somebody else. Somebody else is going to get to sit there. That's not yours. You need to go and find yours out there. And you'd kind of be embarrassed by that, wouldn't you? Well, you ought to be. If you did that, you should be embarrassed. You should be shamed to do something like that. You'd become a wedding crasher at that point. You know, you didn't sit where you should. And so he points that out. You don't just go sit. Why is it beer commercials are always the best ones? But there was a beer commercial with Bob Uecker, you know, and he would always go sit in this best seat. And then they would come and get him and no, that's not your seat. And, you know, of course, he'd say, well, I must be in the front row or I'm a, you know, something like that. And then they'd take him up in the nosebleed section of the stadium. Well, that's the problem of being arrogant, of being too proud. And he would, you know, he thought he was supposed to get to sit at, he thought he was the best guy there. But he wasn't. And that's the problem that we sometimes have. You see, humility is the opposite of pride. Exalting self is pride. Lowering self is humility. Now, lowering self doesn't mean that you don't think yourself as valuable as a human being as that other person. Doesn't mean that you don't think yourself as worthy as that other person. In fact, we have in our papers this week the quote, I believe from C.S. Lewis, that says, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's simply thinking of yourself less. It's not that I don't think I'm worthy. It's that because I think the other person is worthy, I honor them. I respect that person. Because they're made in the image of God. Because of whatever other reasons, I honor that person. And so I don't lift myself up. I lift others up. I look to them with respect and honor. Pride keeps us from admitting our faults and errors, our weaknesses, and from admitting our need for God's guidance. Humility accepts those things. Problems of life can be solved when a person is willing to humble himself. How many disagreements have there been where it could have easily been solved if someone would just go and say, I'm sorry I said that, or I'm sorry I acted that way, or I'm sorry I did that particular thing, or allowed that particular thing, or whatever it may be. If one person would just be big enough to act with humility, it could be solved. Family problems, all the way up to national problems. International problems even. Many of them could quickly be solved with humility. That doesn't mean that the humble person will never have problems with anyone. Jesus was humble. He himself said, "I am meek and lowly of heart." He was a humble person. Didn't mean that he didn't know who he was or didn't know his value. He certainly did. In fact, on one occasion, when he's talking to the people, he said, "You know, this generation, you're going to be judged because when Solomon was around, the queen came from miles away to come hear his wisdom, and someone greater than Solomon is here." He knew his value. He knew he was greater than Solomon. But he still had humility. We said, "Well, how could he just said he was greater than Solomon." Well, he was greater than Solomon. And then he talked about Jonah and the cities of Nineveh. And he said, the city of Nineveh repented at the preaching of Jonah, and one greater than Jonah is here. Was he being arrogant? No, in fact, for him to say that he was greater than Jonah really wasn't putting himself too far up on a pedestal. There were a lot of prophets that were greater than Jonah. But he was far, far greater than any of the prophets. He was greater than Moses. He was greater than any man that ever lived. And so for him to say that was not a boastful thing. It was simply the truth. Humility will guard the heart from the cancers of jealousy, envy, bitterness, vengeance, and the lust for power. See, those are things that pride drives us to. The pride of life, one of the three ways that Satan tempts us. And he gets a lot of folks with that one. Pride of life. And that pride of life will drive us to do all kinds of things and have all kinds of thoughts and feelings that we shouldn't have. Well, let's notice that God is opposed to the proud. You don't want to fight against God. That is a losing proposition. You cannot win. The only way you could win against God was if you were greater than God. And only someone foolish enough to think they're greater than God would be foolish enough to fight against God. But some do. The proud stand up against Him, but He knocks them back down. Proverbs 8 and verse 13, it says, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate." God hates those things, and if we're going to be like Him, we're going to hate the things He hates and love the things He loves. Pride is one of those things that He hates. Pride and arrogance. Proverbs 16:18, "Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall." Heard that one before. Of course, we've probably also heard it often misquoted. Pride goes before the fall. It's not quite what it says, but the idea is still there. Proverbs 16:5. Says, "Everyone proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though they join forces hand in hand, none will go unpunished." You see, it doesn't matter how many people gather themselves together against God. They can't win. Satan and all his angels couldn't win. And neither can human beings win against God. Proverbs 21:4, "A haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin." That's one of the seven things that God hates. Seven things that are an abomination to Him. The proud look is one of them. Psalm 101 and verse 5, "Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. And we talked last week about God couldn't stand a lukewarm Christian. He's going to spew them out of his mouth. Well, someone with a haughty spirit, a haughty look, and a proud heart, God can't stand that person either. He's not going to put up with it. He won't endure that. You know, God endures a lot of things. He is long-suffering, not willing that any should perish. But there are some things He won't put up with. And one of those things is pride and arrogance, haughtiness. He hates that. He won't put up with it. James 4:6 says, but He gives more grace. Therefore, He says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Now, boasting is an indication of pride. To accept honor, to admit the true facts of a thing, that's not necessarily boasting. But bragging and boasting, talking big talk. A lot of times in a sporting event, especially, you know, maybe they get worse as they get older sometimes. But sometimes the junior high and high school kids, they talk a big talk. You know, oh, we're going to beat y'all so bad. You know, y'all don't even need to show up. We're going to beat you so bad. Yeah, they talk a big talk. I guess even the professional athletes that are supposed to be grown-ups still do that sometimes. They get themselves in trouble sometimes with all their talk about how good they are and how much they're going to beat the other person, another team, or whatever it might be. And then many times, how embarrassed they are when they lose. And they're shamed by that. After they talked a good talk. I know on many occasions somebody says, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And well, let's go. Let's see what you got. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, one of the kings of Judah boasted in that way. And the king of Israel sent a message to him and said, the one who has yet to put on his armor shouldn't be boasting like the one who's taking his armor off. In other words, you shouldn't be bragging about winning until after you've won. You know, for a team to go in and say, oh, we're the best there's ever been, we're the best there is, at the beginning of the season, doesn't mean much except they don't know much. But at the end of the season, after they've proved themselves and they've won, they can say, we were the best team this year. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they were the best one ever. But they can say, you know, we won it all this year. We're the champions. The person who wins the race can say, you know, claim the gold medal when you win that race. The person that wins the blue ribbon can look at that and say, you know, I got the blue ribbon. I won. But so many times we brag and boast before the events even take place, as though we can determine the outcome all on our own by our own thoughts and words. James 4:16 says, but now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Boasting indicates pride in the heart. Romans 1:28 and following, one of the things that is mentioned there, along with some other wicked things, it was filled with all unrighteousness. All unrighteousness. And there's a whole list of things in verses 29 and 30, and even 31. But in verse number 30, two of the things that are mentioned are proud and boasters. And they're lumped right in there with murderers. They're lumped right in there with haters of God. You know, he's a pretty good guy. He's just got a little bit of a problem with pride. He's just a little arrogant, and you have to kind of get used to that about him. God lumps that right in there with somebody who's a hater of God. Somebody who's a murderer. And we're the ones, as human beings, who say, well, this is little sin and this is big sin. God says, you know, those folks, that they're all, throw them in there together. 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 5. Paul says, but know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. Men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, and you can go on down that list. Blasphemers, disobedient to their parents, unthankful, unholy. There's a whole list there. But again, being boasters and proud, being lovers of themselves. You can tell sometimes when somebody's putting on airs, when they think too much of themselves. I'm reminded of an old British BBC show that was on PBS. I don't know if it's still on. It was years ago, and it was Keeping Up Appearances, I think was the name of it. And the lady's name is Bucket, B-U-C-K-E-T. That's her last name. And somebody will say, well, come to the door, and they say, well, hello, Miss Bucket, and she said, it's Bouquet, as though changing the way it was pronounced made her more refined just because she said her name different. Well, I say, it's not how you pronounce your name that makes a difference. It's how you live your life. And you know, when someone is boastful and arrogant, it's hard not to like seeing them get knocked down. When there's somebody like Goliath, who steps out there and says, you know, come on, send somebody to fight me. I'll just tear him to pieces and feed him to the birds. And well, you'll want to see somebody like that just get knocked down. And there are people like that a lot in this world, aren't there? And I know the Bible tells us we shouldn't rejoice in the overthrow of our enemies, but boy, sometimes there's some people we want to see them get knocked flat. And it's kind of, you know, we've got to work on that attitude a little, I guess, but can we understand why? God does the same thing. God wants to see those people knocked flat too. And He's going to knock them flat. We don't want to be one of them that God knocks flat. We don't want to be one of those that's boasting and showing our pride and our arrogance and trying to stand up against God. James 3, 13 through 17 also talks about doing our works in the meekness of wisdom. Meekness, not pride. He says that's the wise and understanding way to do things. He says that the earthly wisdom is self-seeking, but the wisdom from above is full of mercy. It's gentle. It's willing to yield it. It's a humble wisdom. Proverbs 27 and verse 2. Solomon says, let another man praise you and not your own mouth. A stranger and not your own lips. Will Rogers said, get someone else to blow your horn and the sound will carry twice as far. When we brag about ourselves, even when it's true, if we say something about ourselves, people tend to think, ah, well, you know, of course they think so. But when we brag on somebody else, that means something to about the, oh, well, if they'd say that about that person, maybe that's true. Maybe that's for real. Then Paul talked to the Corinthians and he said, hey, you know, we already bragged up to some other people about you and about what you're going to do. So you better follow through. He used that to encourage them to do what they intended to do and what they said they would do, to fulfill their promises. Because, hey, we already bragged about you. We already said you were going to do these things. And then he turns right around and brags to the Corinthians about the people from Macedonia, about the Philippians and some others in that area, and how, oh, they gave way more than they could even afford to give, but they did it anyway. And so he... Now, if the Philippians had come out and said to them, you know, we're giving more than we could, we're just really giving, we're great givers, that wouldn't have meant nearly as much, and we wouldn't think much of it. But the fact that Paul said that about them indicates more to us, and we're more likely to believe that. We're always more likely to believe somebody else's opinion. I don't know why that is. Maybe because they're more objective about it. But we're always more willing to accept someone else's opinion about a person than that person's opinion about themselves. I guess it's because the fact of the matter is that none of us can really see ourselves very clearly. Like the preacher and his wife, he had just preached what he thought was one of his best sermons. And so as they were in the car driving home, and they had to travel a ways, so they were in the car for a while, and he was real quiet for a while, and she could tell he was thinking and musing over some things. And finally he said to honey, you know, I've just been thinking, I wonder how many truly great preachers there are in the brotherhood. She thought for a minute and she said, one less than you think there is. When we get to thinking more highly of ourselves than we ought to think, it usually comes back to bite us. And we often don't have that good, honest, objective opinion of ourselves. Most of the time we either think we're better than we are, or we don't think we're as good as we are. Very, very rare to find an individual who actually has the proper opinion of themselves. Now, Jesus being the rare exception to that, because he was God, he couldn't possibly think more highly of himself than he should. But he also didn't think too little of himself. He had the right balance. But the rest of us struggle for that. And it's a constant struggle. Sometimes we get to feeling like we're worthless, and we have to remind ourselves that, no, I'm not worthless. I think about the song we sing sometimes about God and sending Jesus and the sacrifice, and talks about to die for such a worm as I. That kind of bothers me. Jesus didn't really die for worms, but I understand what they're getting at, that we're not worthy of his death, but still... I don't like to think of myself in the same relationship as a worm. I'm not on that same level. I'm a human being created in the image of God. I know I may act like a worm sometimes, but I still don't like to think I am one. That kind of bothers me. We can think too lowly of ourselves. And the problem is sometimes when we think too lowly of ourselves, then we won't go and do what God wants us to do. So humility is not thinking that you're worthless. That's not humility. That's as improper of a view of yourself as is the one that thinks that you're God's gift to the world. Both of those are incorrect. And we need to find the happy medium between those two things. God expects and respects humility. Micah 6:8. He has shown you, O man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. That's it. Three things. Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly with God. Micah said, that's all God's really asking of you. Now I know there are a lot of commands and there's a lot of teachings and a lot falls into those three categories, in other words. But that's really it. Do what's right, be just, love mercy, be merciful, and walk humbly with God. Submit yourselves to Him. Do what He tells you to do. That's really it. That, You know, we sometimes people try to make Christianity this big, complicated thing, and I know there are a lot of details involved, but really it just boils down to, will we do what God said? Will we love what's right? And will we be merciful people? That's really what Christianity boils down to, is those three things. Romans 12:3, for I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. We have a measure of faith. Now, sometimes people take that to mean that each of us has our own share of faith. But what that actually is referring to is the fact that we have a way to measure our faith. And we need to measure it according to the Scriptures. Not think of ourselves more highly than we ought, but using the standard that God's given us, using the measure of faith that God's given us, look honestly at how we measure up. Romans 12:16. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Oh, the book of Proverbs says, do you see a man who's wise in his own eyes? See somebody that's conceited, that's arrogant? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Because when somebody thinks they're too smart to learn anything new, that they're too wise to be taught, that they're too good for anybody else, when somebody thinks like that, that's the end of them. There's nothing you can do with a person like that except get away from them and leave them to their own destruction. And yet, sometimes we head in that direction. And we've got to watch out. Romans 14:11, for it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me and every tongue shall confess to God. See, we've got the choice. We can walk humbly with our God now. We can bow our knee to Him. We can serve Him now. Or we can stand up against Him now during this life and we can just thumb our nose at Him. We can just ignore Him entirely and pretend He's not out there. If we want to. And not bow. Not kneel. But you know what will happen on the day of judgment? We'll kneel. So we have that choice. Either we kneel now of our own free will, or He will force us to kneel. And at that point, it'll be too late. When He forces it, it's too late to do anything about it. And we'll be doomed. Philippians 2:1-4 also talks about these things. Be like-minded. Be of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but the interests of others. Now, we may misunderstand that. When he says, let everyone esteem others better than himself, understand that Paul's not saying that we just think the other person's always right, or that they're always, you know, that they're smarter than us, that they're better Christians than us. But when it comes to the choices we make about what we're going to do, we put the other person first. We think about them and what's best for them instead of always thinking about what's best for me. We know this is the way to look at that because there were some teachers that were going around as though they had special knowledge from God, and they were bragging about their special knowledge from God. And you know what? Paul didn't go into the Corinthians particularly and say, oh, you know those people that have been boasting and bragging about all that? They're right. I'm wrong. They're better than me. They know more than I know, and so you should listen to them. No, that's not what Paul did at all. He said, they're fakes. They're boasting and building themselves up and instead of building God up, instead of building Christ up. They're causing division and they're telling lies. And he just beat that down. And in the letter to the church in Galatia, he did the same thing. He said, anyone brings any other gospel than that I have brought to you, let him be accursed. So he didn't just say you always think the other person is wiser and smarter and knows what. That's not his point. But his point is you always think about that person. Think about what's for their own good, what's best for them. That's what true love is. The agape love that we read about in the Bible. God's love for us. If God had thought only, if Jesus had thought only about what was best for them, do you think it was best for Him to come and be a human being? Well, no, that wasn't best for Him. You think it was best for Him to die and have to be separated from His Father on that cross? When He cried out, my God, why have you forsaken? Was that best for Him? Well, no. If He had been selfish and thought only of Himself, He would have stayed in heaven. But He came down here. Not because it was best for Him, but because it was best for us. He thought of others first instead of Himself. And He left us that example to show us that we should think of others first. James 4:10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up. 1 Peter 5:5 and 6, submit yourselves one to another. Be clothed with humility. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. There will come a time that God will raise the humble up to be with Him. Sometimes we're too impatient for that. Then we see also that the humble are blessed. Matthew 23 and verse 12, whoever exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. Jesus said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Proverbs 22, 4, by humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Proverbs 29:23 says, a man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. Do we want to be blessed? Humility brings those blessings. You know, the perilous times that Paul said would come in the latter days has a lot to do with the lack of humility and the presence of pride. He talks about these men that were lovers of themselves and lovers of money and boasters and proud. And that pride brings them to the point where they reject God. Romans 1 talks about that. Who, when they knew God, they refused to acknowledge Him as God. We've got a lot of people who have gotten to that point in our country today. That's nothing new. It was going on back there in Romans chapter 1, back there in the first century. It was going on there. That's not a new thing. There will always be people who will refuse to acknowledge God, refuse to submit to Him. We don't want to be a part of that group. You see, one day, all will humble themselves before God. Philippians 2, 9 through 13 talks about that. Every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. They can deny it now. They can reject Him now. But at one point, they will confess Him. Why not do it now? And you know, sometimes we're so much about the pride and the honor and the glory of a thing for self. One woman wrote this poem about that called I Wonder. She said, you know, Lord, how I serve You with great emotional fervor in the limelight. You know how eagerly I speak for You at the service club. You know my genuine enthusiasm at a Bible study. But how would I react, I wonder, if You pointed to a basin of water and asked me to wash the calloused feet of a bent and wrinkled old person day after day, month after month, in a room where nobody saw and nobody knew. You see, it's one thing to do something when others are looking. But the true question of character is not what you do when everybody's looking. It's what do you do when you think nobody's looking. That tells a lot about who you really are. Have you voluntarily humbled yourself? Of your own free will, humbled yourself before God? Or are you waiting for judgment day when God will humiliate you and humble you Himself? Don't wait. Do it now. If you need to respond to God's invitation this morning, don't wait. Don't allow Satan and his influence of pride. Oh, well, if I respond to the invitation, people will look down on me. People will think I'm not the Christian I ought to be. Well, if someone looks down on the person who's willing to humble themselves before God for not being the Christian they ought to be, the fact of the matter is that person's not the Christian they ought to be. So we all have to humble ourselves before God. We all have to admit that we're wrong and He's right. We all have to submit to His will for our lives. Now, or we'll submit to His will for our eternity. If you need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.